Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyCars.ie. Low-cost car insurance specialists. See how much you can save at InsureMyCars.ie.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan, and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you? All good?
Oh, all brilliant, I have to say. Really enjoyed this week following the snooker because there's been more action off table than on table, it has to be said. loads going on. What a busy week. And I suppose we'll start with the biggest part of it was yourself and Barry Hearn on the TV and all of that talk about the Crucible and the exchange between you and it feels like snooker is really at a crossroads now of a big decision is about to be made on what the future holds for the World Championships.
Yeah, it seems that way. And, you know, obviously Hearn wants to make more money, you know, wants to make more money for his company and probably for the players as well. But, you know, it'd be a sad day, Reg, to be honest. You know, I'm very passionate about the Crucible, about the World Championship, about its home here in Sheffield. And I just feel like, you know, if we sell the World Championships to Saudi or China, I think we're selling our soul, you know. And I don't think it's right. I think the World Championship should remain here. You know, it has remained here since 1977. It's coming up to 50 years. And, you know, it would be a very, very sad day if we get to that stage in our, you know, in sport or in life that, you know, we just sell to the highest bidder. And I think some things in life you cannot buy, you know, and you shouldn't be able to buy the World Championship. You shouldn't be able to buy its history, its heritage, and all the nostalgia that goes with it, you know. And I'm pretty sort of passionate on that stage of it, you know.
Well, I accept that and I agree with you in what you're saying, but we're of a certain age and a certain vintage, and maybe traditionalists or whatever you want to call it. But I suppose the other way to look at it is there are other players and younger players maybe who wouldn't appreciate that same level of history. Like, I'm looking at Vafai. He went out making an early exit, and he was given out about it. He called it smelly, you know. And Ronnie is always given out about it, and Barry Hearn is given out about it. And there seems to be an increasing number of players who are just not liking the venue, and they're calling for it to be rebuilt, renovated, whatever way you want to do it. So if the players don't want to play there, and if the mood is to change, maybe its days are numbered.
Yeah, maybe, but there'll be only a small amount of players, I think, that would want to change it. You know, I think when you speak with the rest of the players, they absolutely love it. You know, the atmosphere in the Crucible is like no other, you know, and it does certain things to certain players. It's so cramped. It is very cramped. There's only 950 seats in it. It's very, very small, but it's a very unique atmosphere, you know, and I think you know, a lot of players either like it or they don't. It's one of those players, you either like it or you hate it, you know. And if you lose, like Vafai lost, and he said it wasn't a great place, he didn't like it, but I'm sure if he won, it would have been smelling of roses, Reg, you know.
Yeah, no, I get that, but I mean, there has to be more of a solution to it than, like, they have to react, is what I'm saying. So the Crucible, those accusations are there, and you've said yourself, you know, you said 900 people, it's cramped, the conditions aren't good, the dressing rooms need updating. So if they stand still, it's going to be lost, because Hearn, like, one thing he did say, and he was very honest about it in that interview with you guys, is money talks. And someone will come in. The players will look at this and they'll go, well, look, this is my job at the end of the day. If you and I heard Ronnie O'Sullivan saying it, if you're going to pay me more money and I can earn more money in my job, well, of course I'm going to take it, because ultimately it comes down to that. And you can have all the tradition and love for it that we have or whatever, but at the end of the day, as Ronnie said, people want to feed their families. So if they don't react, is there a plan? Have you heard? Is there something there from
to react to this and
do something about it?
Yeah, I think what's happened, well, the problem with the Crucible is I think it's like it's sort of listed. So you can't really do much with, you can't sort of knock the Crucible down and then build it back up again. So what I think what Hearn wants is, or what he's trying to do, is use the Saudis or Chinese to maybe push Sheffield City Council into building maybe a new Crucible across the road, like a 2,500 or 3,000 seater, you know. So I think that might be his ploy, you know, not necessarily sort of take it away. And if they don't, well, then maybe he will do, you know what I mean? But then the contract.
Yeah, on that, you know, the Crucible, just so we understand it, is it used throughout the rest of the year as well for other conferences and events and everything else? So it's a busy building, is it? Yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, it is, It's a theatre. It's a theatre.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so it's like our own Olympia Theatre, you know?
Okay.
So it's used all the time. So I think that's what he might want, is like another venue across the road or somewhere else that is going to be built, purpose-built, that couldn't be used as a theatre as well, but just a bigger one, you know, with better facilities and sort of more facilities for corporate hospitality and more seats, basically, more bums on seats, because the tickets are very rare. You know, they're sold out. They'll be sold out now tomorrow for next year already, you know, which is, I think, over 45,000 tickets when you work it out over the 17 days. And, yeah, it's. I think that may be his ploy. You know what I mean? But I mean, even if it does move to Saudi or China or whatever, how would BBC react? What about crowds in Saudi, which there wouldn't be many in anyway? Yeah. There probably wouldn't be the same crowds in China. So I don't know where it can go. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's a conundrum. There's no doubt about it. But it seems to me to be that they do need to react to it. But I suppose the council may turn around and go, well, hang on, it's 2 weeks in the year that the large crowds are coming. It doesn't generate that much revenue for just if it was more more events or whatever. Maybe fair enough. But it is. It's a tricky one. But it seems it is coming to a head, because at the end of the day, you know, this money washing, sport washing stuff that they go on about, it's happened in golf. We give out about it. You and I have said it. We've said, live golf, you know, the traditionalists, the PGA, but now they've compromised and, you know, they're working together, and the players who took the big money now look like the clever ones, because you're kind of going, well, they got 150 million a pop and now they're back in again, you know, so there's a bit of that. And I suppose...
But does live golf really work? You know what I mean? I mean, I know it's happened.
Yeah.
But I mean, who watches it?
No, I know that. It's a farcical
sort of breakaway tour that hardly anybody watches. You know, that doesn't have any meaning. The Crucible has meaning. It's World Championship, you know, and like we're probably having a live tour, which, you know, because the players are threatening to break away as well.
Yeah.
But it could be meaningless, like, you know, exhibition type.
I completely understand that. But what I'm saying to you is they have to react in a way that means that the players are happy and it maintains its value. You know, that's what they just can't sit back and just say, oh, tradition and like. Like there's got to be a reaction to this that addresses the issues that they keep talking about. That's the point, I suppose.
Of course,
it's easy for them to throw mud at it if there's no reaction. You know, if Ronnie can turn around and go, the dressing rooms are too small. Vafai can turn around and say it's smelly.
Yeah.
Somebody else can turn around and say, Barry Hearn can turn around and say, well, there's only 900 people. If you don't address those issues, they'll always have that to throw at you. So, look, I mean, anyway, you know, it's a conundrum. There's no doubt about it, but there's got to be a reaction because... otherwise it'll be lost. But I mean, it seems to be this year, getting back to the snooker side, I don't know whether it's rubbing off on the players or what's going on, but Lucas Purcell, I know he was unwell beforehand, he fell victim to the curse as always. Vafai is out early, Selby is gone, Williams is gone. There's a lot of big names dropping off already.
Yeah, I think 8 seeds of the 16, of the top 16, 8 of them went in the first round, you know, which is quite incredible, you know. But I suppose it just shows you, you know, the standard coming through as well. You know, there's such small margins, you know. But of course, there's still the big hitters in there. O'Sullivan's there, Joe Trump is there, Higgins is there, Mark Allen.
Yeah.
And you've got Murphy in there with Maguire. There's some cracking matches coming up, you know, Lizowski against Bingham. But O'Sullivan at the moment is looking big favourite, you know.
Absolutely. I saw Milkins having a little bit of a tantrum as well, yeah. Throwing the cue on the ground. He wasn't too happy. 13-4 defeat to David Gilbert. He's a bit of a having a bit of a wonderful tournament after knocking Purcell out as well, isn't he, Gilbert? But Milkins,
he's doing he's doing so well, Dave Gilbert. Yeah, and it was a bit of a reaction. Throwing the cue on the floor, you know. Yeah. Even the people in the front row got a fright, you know.
Look, he didn't throw it at them, you know.
I don't know what he was like at javelin in school, yeah. But the cue didn't go very far, Reg. It wasn't even a good cue action, you know.
No, I thought it was a real petulant schoolboy type situation,
yeah.
You know. And then he kind of walked off, sat down, remembered, oh geez, I better pick up the cue. Walk in there,
walk around. I know.
As John Parr was saying, he could have damaged his cue as well. So
the tip could have flown off. That would have been funny, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Thinking about who might be, I know Ronnie, but apart from Ronnie, who might be starting to look good? I know Williams was in our pre-tournament list, and there's a few of them gone, but who else is looking good so far?
I think Trump is looking very good. I mean, he's 11-5 up and looking good to get in the next round against. He's playing Tom Ford. He finishes off this morning, so he should be into the quarterfinals. And O'Sullivan looked very good in his first match, and he was very bullish in his interview afterwards, listening out, not like his normal self, you know, about, you know, not playing well or haven't played well for so long, I'm not happy. You know, he was very bullish in the way he sort of, the way he played, and listening off his achievements, you know, of what he's done and what he's proud of and stuff like that. So it's a different type of sort of mantra coming from O'Sullivan, which sort of doesn't bear well for the rest of them, it's good positive sort of vibes coming from him, you know.
Excellent stuff. I see as well Mark Allen talking about, he's done so well, he's lost nearly 6 stone at this stage, hasn't he, in this health drive that he's on. But he's claiming he's still got a party, he likes to go out, so
I think he's playing a cracking match now against John Higgins in the last 16. That's going to be, they start today and they finish on Monday. So theirs is a 3-day match. But that's going to be a classic. I think whoever comes through that in the top half is going to be very, very dangerous. They're separated. Judd Trump is due to meet, if they both get through, would meet O'Sullivan in the semifinals.
Yeah.
And Higgins or Allen could possibly beat Dave Gilbert or the winner of Murphy and Maguire, which is a cracking match as well in the top half, you know.
Excellent stuff. Well, okay.
Yeah.
It's been a great coverage so far, and hopefully it'll be just as entertaining off the table this week as it has been on it. And we'll catch up with you again next week and hear a bit more about it.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Reg.
All right,
thanks very much.
Mind yourself, Ken.
Let's wait and see what happens. Okay,
yeah,
take
absolutely.
Care.
I look forward to it. Take care. That's our one and only Ken Doherty giving us all of the latest on that. And like I said, there's loads happening in snooker, off the table and on the table. But it's a difficult time for world snooker. It's got to be said. Pressure coming on with the venue and with the facilities. The history and the tradition are one thing. We all love that, but I suppose you got to keep with the times as well and keep upgrading, and there's pressure to do that. So we'll see how World Snooker react and how the World Championship ends up. It's time to turn our attention to rugby now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Will Slattery of the Left Wing Podcast and the Irish Independent. Morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
Very well indeed, thanks. Yes, looking forward to another great weekend of sport. I suppose, Will, I have to talk, I'd like to start, if I could, with the women's game. Obviously, they're taking on Scotland in Kingspan Stadium later on today. Big game for them at 2:30. But we probably have to start by talking about last week's game. And, you know, it's a result that makes a lot of people turn their eyes up maybe and just kind of go off, you know, we're so far behind. But I think that's an unfair way of looking at it, because really England, you know, who got victory, for those who don't know, as well, and against Ireland, it wasn't that it was a bad performance by the Irish women's team. It's just that England are just so far ahead, and that's of every other nation as well. It's not just Ireland. You'd have to wonder what can be done, what needs to be done to address that situation where you've got such an imbalance between England and the rest of the world, almost, even New Zealand, I include in that.
Yeah, I'm actually very interested to see how the game against France goes today, because obviously they're the top two. And if England do something similar to France, obviously not to the same scale on the scoreboard, but if it's a massively one-sided affair, question marks will be asked about the viability of the competition. Obviously, it's the golden goose in the men's game, and naturally it's been replicated in the women's game. They have their own window now, which has definitely increased visibility, albeit sometimes, as we saw with the Leinster-Rochelle game, the fixture scheduling isn't ideal. So, but I read an interesting piece in the Telegraph last week. You know, they asked their five different journalists to give five different ideas to about the whole kind of England dominance debate, and someone made the point that maybe they don't need to follow the men's game so slavishly. Obviously, as a Six Nations, as a brand, it's important to have that for the women's game, because it does draw in eyeballs. But is it actually fit for purpose if England are so outrageously dominant and they're just so much further ahead than everybody else? Like 88-10 or whatever the final score was, like that's a massacre. Like I'm watching it, it felt like that. Like every time England got the ball, they could have scored, and you can't, that's not a viable competition. And I know Ireland are at a down period at the moment, but even if Ireland were better, this England team have taken women's rugby, and like, you don't want to be giving out either, because like England, what they've done with their women's game has been phenomenal. Like getting good crowds into Twickenham. It's an interesting debate. I don't really have the answer to it, because the Women's Six Nations, as I said, is a great showcase for the women's game. But if one team wins it every single year, like it'll turn into the Leinster Championship in Gaelic football, where it's like a non-sporting event and it's just kind of there to tick a box almost. So I don't really have the answer, to be honest.
Well, sorry to cut across you, but I suppose the way to think about it and the way to look at it is, in my mind, you've got to go right back to the very beginning of professionalism, which I was a part of in this country for the men. And you look at what happened there. We were in a similar situation to where the Irish women are now with the game back then in the men's game. We were left streets behind by the likes of England, New Zealand, France, as they embraced professionalism and they took off and they ran with it, and we had to catch up. And that's what we spent our time doing right up until sort of the 2000s, you know, the early 2000s, when we finally seemed to catch up and we were able to beat the likes of England. Never got the All Blacks, but we were beating Australia, we were beating South Africa, we were beating teams like that. We attained some form of parity. Now, for me, that all started when the URC, or the Celtic League as it was known then, began, because we were now playing consistent professional games at a level against good teams, and realizing that we could beat them, and in Leinster's case, winning the URC the first year that it was there. So there's an example of it. Now, if you look at the English setup for a women's game, they have that. They have a very good structure and a very good league, and we even have some of the Irish women playing in England. For that, it's so reminiscent to me of the early days of the men's professional game. So the answer to me is very clearly, we need a proper domestic game for women that they can compete against the other nations, whether it be Celtic League or whatever, or even just within the country, that the AIL is properly supported.
You know, I agree with all that completely, but for me it's like two issues. Like, it's the question of getting Ireland more competitive, but for me it's the question of England are now so far ahead that I'm actually not sure, from what I'm watching now, like, if the gap can be bridged. Like, that would be my concern, that England have moved so far ahead of the Celtic nations in particular, that, like, even with the vibrant domestic league and the players getting more support, and even if Ireland make improvements, are they actually going to attain or get near the level we saw last Saturday or, you know, last weekend in Twickenham? I'm not sure. So that's why it's kind of a dual question for me is, what's the best way of the Six Nations progressing? Even if Ireland do improve and, say, become the best of the rest or competing with France, will they be able to compete with England, or will England still be just streets ahead of everybody else in the women's game?
Well, again, to just make the point on that, so I remember playing against the All Blacks in Lansdowne Road where we're beating 66-10. That was in 98. In 98, yeah. We were beaten 66-10. And the exact same questions would have been asked. We'll never catch up with them. We'll never beat England. We'll never beat South Africa because they're just too good. They're too far ahead of us. They had 3-4 years of a steal on us because they embraced professionalism quickly enough. The answer to that was that the IRFU invested in the game. They put the facilities in place for the men at that time for all of us. Things went up rapidly. You know, the science of the game, the trainers, the recovery thing, everything, you name it. It was invested in, and now look at it. We're number one in the world, you know?
Let me kind of change my answer. I'm not saying that like it's not worth putting in these structures, obviously, because as you say, Ireland did catch up. As you say, in 1998, it would have seemed unfathomable that 25 years later or whatever it is that Ireland would be where they are. So I take your point. So it's more the England question. That England, I don't think even as good as All Blacks were then, it's not as if they were winning every single World Cup or every single, you know, or England won every single Six Nations in that era. They won the most of them, but there were other competitors. Whereas in this time, I just think England look. Now, that's why the England-France game today is a big one for me, as in I hope it's a competitive game that at least showcases, if even of two teams, it becomes at least semi-competitive. That's why I hope England don't just run riot today, or else I think it doesn't bode well for the overall health of the tournament. But I take your point about all the areas that Ireland women's team can improve, and that's why I'm really intrigued to see how they get on today. It's a massive game for them in its own right.
Yeah, and I do, again, I'm not here to bash anybody. I do think there are you know, it is being addressed. It's taking time. It's taking longer than a lot of people would like. It is being addressed, though, because I think there is that realization that it's the only chance that we have. And I do think there have been, it's hard to, you know, square this statement, but like there have been improvements, massive improvements in that Irish team over the course of this Six Nations. I think this Scottish game today for them is massively important. They have to get a result here in this because there have been improvements. It's hard to square a statement like that when you see an 88-10 defeat last week, but we got to put it in context, you know?
No, definitely. Like, because the first game against France, who are the best of the rest, like Ireland were competitive, much more competitive than they were last year. I think they should have beaten Italy in the RDS. Like we talked about that game a few weeks ago. Like they dropped some howlers on the line. Then they absolutely thumped Wales. And obviously, we can say, "Oh well, Wales are the worst team." But God, that was Ireland last year, so we need some credit for that. And Scotland, to be fair, you know, they've beaten Italy, they've beaten Wales. They do look ahead of Ireland, but not to the extent. They only barely. They won by 1 or 2 points in both of those games. Like Ireland beat Wales by, you know, 30 or 40 points. So I'm expecting this to be a competitive game. I think it's going to be the biggest ever crowd for a Women's Six Nations game in Ireland, which is great to see. People getting out to support them up in Ravenhill tonight or this afternoon. And I'll give them a right chance to finish on a high. I think you have to just be realistic and throw that game out. I know the scoreline is ugly and it might be hard to wipe it in a week, but that's what Scott Beaman had to do, because realistically we're playing kind of in our own tournament. If we can win today and results go away and we come third, we qualify automatically for the World Cup, which would be huge given obviously we didn't qualify last time. So it's a massive game today, and it would be, if to get a result today and win would really copper fasten. And I agree with you, it sounds funny to say when you lose like you did last week, but there have been positives compared to the previous years, and a big win today would really, you know, kind of seal that.
Well, we wish them the very best of luck in Kingspan Stadium today at 2:30 as they take on Scotland in that Six Nations match. Okay, moving on to the men's game now. I saw a funny one during the week. I felt kind of a little bit of a smart ass remark on Twitter. You know, are Leinster going to be slammed for sending a weakened team over to South Africa the way the Stormers were when they sent it over to the team for the Champions Cup? A statement, you know, I kind of got the idea behind that statement, but it was a poor performance from Leinster, it has to be said, even by their standards and even by the fact that they didn't have a full team out. And you could argue they're going with something similar again this week.
Oh yeah, like they've even weaker team out today. Like Kieran Frawley and Harry Byrne, I think I've gone back to Dublin along with you know, some of the coaching staff. Like Leinster ultimately, with the lead they have, earned the right to select that team. Like Leo Cullen has obviously weighed things up and said we can afford to lose both of these games. That wouldn't have been the plan, but we can afford to and still maybe get a top seed or maybe a second seed. Like ultimately, the South African trip has fallen the same part of the calendar the last 2 years, and Leinster have produced their best performance of both seasons against Toulouse in the semi-final and won well. So it hasn't disrupted the team morale by having defeats. It hasn't really disrupted the flow. Ultimately, they haven't got over the line in the final, but I don't think it's because of how Leinster have managed the South African block. I don't think it would make sense to bring a whole host of frontliners down. Maybe you could argue for the Lions game last weekend, but I don't really have a problem with it. Like, as in ultimately, the Champions Cup is where Leinster want to be at. They can still win the URC, I think, by making these selections. Now, obviously, they haven't lost today yet, but given the selection, I would be astounded if they got near a victory, because I just think the Stormers, after losing to the Ospreys, need a win badly. Whereas Leinster, the team they picked, they know that even getting a losing bonus one would be a result. I don't have a problem with what Leinster are doing. I think it's actually a smart decision. I don't think some people are suggesting it might derail the season or derail morale. I really don't think so. I think once this match is over, it really gets into the end game. Croke Park against Northampton to the end of June. They could be playing 7-8 games. I think they're all almost at home by one. And that's when I think that the end of season really kicks in. This was just a 2-week block they needed to navigate and get through it without any injuries or maybe sneaking a win like they did last year against the Lions or sneaking a couple of losing bonus points like they did the year before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see how that goes. Okay, Ulster were in action last night. Strange sort of a game, I have to say. Benetton impressed me. I thought they played very good rugby for a lot of the time, were willing to have a go. And Ulster were guilty of being Ulster. You know, they look in control of the game. They look like they've got everything in the bag, and then sort of lapses of concentration and errors thrown in the middle of it all. And in the end, Benetton get back to get that bonus point. It was a very unusual sort of a game, I felt.
Yeah, they ended up getting 2 bonus points out of it with a try bonus point and losing by 7. And in such a tight, packed playoff race, like Ulster could really regret letting them back in the door for those. Like, as you say, they were 15 points up at home in the second half, having already done the kind of the hard work, I think, of getting that bonus point in the bag. And you think to shut up shop, don't give any tries away to let them back into it. And then all of a sudden, they're only a point ahead. And look, at least they dug it out, because had they lost last night, it's end of season stuff. You know, it's completely disastrous. And even as it stands, they're going to be up against it to get that top 8 place, which is really important. That they have, you know, they have Leinster at home, which, depending on what team Leinster pick, could be winnable. And they also have to go to Munster on the final day, which is going to be tricky, because Munster are going to be going all guns for this URC title. So they have some tough fixtures left to come. So they needed that win last night, and they got it. But yeah, again, the manner which, kind of similar to the week before, they beat Cardiff, but yeah, the kind of the manner which it came, like, you're not, it's not like kind of a glass half full kind of win, but ultimately they all count the same in the standings, so they are still where they kind of needed to be. But yeah, it's not as positive as it ought to have been, given the dominance they had about, you know, 3/4 of the way through.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you mentioned Munster there. Have to say, talking to a few South Africans last weekend, they didn't give Munster a chance against the Bulls. They really felt that Bulls team that was out last week was, you know, in South Africa, going to do a job on Munster. But Munster, as always, they defied the odds, and that was a really, really important win for them on the road, and has to give them a great boost in their thought process of defending a title.
Massively. And you know what made me laugh? Like, obviously last year, you know, Leo Cullen made his decision to rest all his players. Yeah. Munster took advantage. This year was the opposite. Jake White rested his players the week before to go full bore on Munster, and Munster still beat them. Munster just love going to South Africa, it seems. Obviously it reignited their season last year. They beat the Stormers, they drew with the Sharks, and then beat the Stormers in the final. And I didn't give them a chance either. The Bulls in Loftus Versfeld is probably the, you know, the trickiest away venue in rugby almost at club level. And they were well worth their win. Obviously the red card played a part, but it was a red card. Like, I know Jake White was kind of giving out that the one wasn't given against Leinster, but that's, you know, that's two different arguments, really. Like, it was a red card for me, and Munster took full advantage. Today is a massive win for them. All of a sudden, Leinster coming back to the pack really opens up a path for him to, at the very least, get a top set, a two seeding, which would give them home advantage in a quarter and a semi. But they have to win today. Now, obviously, the Lions were very impressive last weekend, but Munster have their full team out over there. You know, Orgy Snyman all of a sudden looks like the player we hoped he would be when he arrived. They're playing really good stuff. They need to be ruthless, though, because in the Champions Cup, you know, they got that big win over Toulon and then gave it back the following week against Northampton. If they can copper fast on last week's win with another win today, all of a sudden they're going back to Ireland with two home games to come and an away trip to Edinburgh, which is winnable. They could go, they could run the table and all of a sudden maybe even top the standings, depending on how Leinster select their team going forward. So all of a sudden it went from quite a dispiriting season again after the Northampton defeat to having a shot in the arm again and a real good path to some home games, which not only give you an advantage in winning the tournament, but the money it brings as well. And obviously money has been a hot topic in Irish rugby the last couple of weeks with Leinster and Geordie Barrett and all this. So if Munster can get a couple of much needed home games into the coffers, it will be massive as well.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see how that unfolds. They've got the Lions, of course, away this week, and we'll see how they get on. I'd be backing them for a win on that one as well. Okay, Will, that's all the time we have for rugby this week. As always, been a great pleasure talking to you, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Thanks, Reggie.
Take care. That's Will Slattery there of the Left Wing Podcast, and of course Irish Independent journalist as well, giving us all of his thoughts on the rugby. An absolutely packed weekend of GAA. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Sean Lane and indeed on the line by Brian Talty. Morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you doing? Looking forward to the weekend now?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. It's right. I'm never better. And Sean in studio with me as well. And as Brian said there, looking forward to the weekend, Sean, and an absolutely packed weekend it is, starting with the football.
Absolutely. Football and hurling, Reggie, as always. And too many games to get through, but we have the right man here to get through all the football with us anyway. Brian, good morning to you. How are you doing?
How are you doing, Sean?
I'm very good. Brian, I suppose we'll start in Ulster. I mean, Jim McGuinness pulled off the trick of the season, already beaten Mickey Hart's Derry. They're going to be up against a game that we kind of didn't cover last weekend, was Tyrone and Cavan. How's this one going to go?
Yeah, it was a fabulous win for Donegal the last day, and I think, you know, everything that they worked on in the training field seemed to come true for them. It was amazing. I'd say they couldn't believe it themselves that tactically they got it so right and that Derry were so naive. Sean, particularly on the kick out, like, I mean, I think directly from Sean Patton's kick out, Donegal's got something like 3-3 out of that, which was unbelievable. Like, I mean, it's okay for something to happen once, but you don't let it happen again and again, you know. So you'd wonder about Mickey Hart when he was out on the sideline, to be honest with you, you know. Like, we build fellas up hugely, but like, you can't be that naive that you allow the same thing to happen. And it was old style, like the big long kick out. But but Jim McGuinness got it absolutely right. I'd say he was rubbing the hands. He couldn't believe it, that he got it so right, you know. But look at it, he's getting huge performances out of fellas who looked very stale last year. You know, the fellas like Ryan McHugh, unbelievable, Lushing Gallen, Darrow Buil. These fellas are massive in the game. So Jim has really it up and going. But now people after a week are talking about them as contenders for the Sam Maguire, you know. Yeah. So football is funny. It's funny, Sean, you know, and particularly championship football, that can happen.
And where, Brian, do you think it sees, as we used to call them growing up, the fly goalkeepers after that game?
I never liked to fly goalkeeper. I never liked to have the keeper out around me in the middle of the field. But it was a bit crazy. And it will be interesting today to see. Niall Morgan is one of the best at this, you know. It'll be interesting to see how Tyrone uses him. I think this is going to be a different game, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, the amount of space that Derry left behind their midfield for Donegal to use this tactic was unbelievable. I think Tyrone will probably let them have the kick out and will pack it back and not allow that space to be developing back there. So it could be it's a different game. It'll be a different game tactically for both of them. But this Tyrone team, you know, it's down the middle, like, they have a very good spine down the middle, to be honest with you. I mean, with Niall Morgan, Hamsey at full back, you know, Matty Donnelly was massive back from a very serious injury. And then you have the Canavans, McGeary and McCurry up in the forward line. Now, that's good. And they've added nine fellas to that that only played their first championship match last week. And that should bring those guys on. So it will be an interesting game, you know, and it'll be interesting to see how Jim deals with the likes of Canavan and McCurry up there as well, because they are very dangerous. But I suppose if you're looking at form, you're kind of looking at what happened last week, yeah, to be honest with you. You know, Donegal were probably better last week, but it will be an interesting game. It'll be a tight game, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But you'd have to fancy Donegal in it. But yeah, I think Tyrone will put up a big performance.
Yeah, I go along with you there. The other one, the kind of bridesmaid over the last couple of years, Armagh losing the penalties with Galway and losing the penalties in Ulster final with Derry. They have down and Conor Lafferty's crowd. How will this one go? And this will be a lot tighter than I think people expect, will it?
Well, I expect big things from Armagh, and I have been expecting it for a while. And as you say, it's only the little inches that they need. I mean, they've been beaten on penalties and everything like that. My friends in Armagh keep telling me they're not as good as I think they are, but I just look at the firepower they have, and you look at that forward line, and you say to yourself, Lord God, tonight, you know, once they play them up there, like the last day, you know, you had Mernan, Grugan, Soupy Campbell, Ushing, Connolly. These fellas played brilliantly, yeah, and they showed huge appetite against Fermanagh. They just wiped Fermanagh out of it in the first half. And the other thing is, they've kind of added a seventh forward in the face of Ushing O'Neill in the middle of the field. Like, what a massive footballer to have coming forward as well, you know. So maybe in the league, they fooled us a little bit and being a little bit over defensive. I think if they go like they did against Fermanagh in the first half, the last day, they could beat Down well, because I was impressed, and I think you were, Sean, with Down in a few of the matches in the league, because their forwards have huge pace and they went for goals and everything like that and got a lot of goals. But, you know, their last two performances, the one against Westmeath and the one the last day against Antrim, were poor enough, to be honest with you. So I fancy Armagh big time in this one, and particularly because they're a big, physical, strong, skillful side, and they could be favourites now at this stage to win Ulster as well, you know. So I think they'll come out of that one.
I would agree with that as well. I think Down did the Tarleton Cup final, I just thought that they, when they didn't turn over Meath for a few goals that day, that they weren't as good as we thought they were. But look, we'll flick on to Leinster. Dublin beating Meath the last day without a Brian Fenton. They're returning. They're going to play Offaly. Is there only going to be one winner in this one? Desi Farrell, surely, would think so.
Absolutely. And I mean, you can see what he's doing as well. He's putting out a very strong team. Brian Fenton is back into the middle of the field again. Very strong forward line. So there's only one winner in it, to be honest with you. But for Offaly, really, this is about development, to be honest with you. You know, they won the under 21, I think, Sean, in 2021, I think it was.
Yeah.
And Declan Kelly was the manager.
Yeah.
He's now manager of the senior team. He's bringing a lot of these guys through. And they're saying they're looking forward to going to Croke Park to take on the best team in Ireland at the moment. I wouldn't be looking forward to it myself, to be honest with you.
But you have to say, Brian, they did have a very good win against Laois now the last day.
They had a brilliant win against Laois, and we didn't expect it. A lot of people didn't expect that. But as I say to you, Declan Kelly is a very, very good manager. I know him from schools football, and as I say, he was manager there under 20s when they won the All-Ireland. He's bringing a lot of those players through now, and it's kind of development for them. And I think the big thing for Offaly today would be maybe to get 20 minutes or 30 minutes of a good performance against Dublin, because that's all any Leinster team can expect at this stage. So if they get that, it gives them momentum going into the Tarleton Cup or the qualifiers or whatever way they go. But certainly Declan Kelly is doing great work with the young lads down there, and it is about development. And hopefully, you know, they do put on a good performance, to play to the best they can and see how it goes, because Dublin, it's awesome taking on Dublin in Croke Park, you know.
Yeah, agreed. And I suppose the last one, and I've certainly a huge graw for Glenn Ryan and Kildare, but, you know, I mean, one of the greatest Leinster footballers I've seen for certainly 20, 30 years, and going through a really rough time. And I know we made this point before, but Ger Brennan with Loud, you know, beat Wexford, probably nothing to write home about there. How will this one go, and have Kildare, will they just get over the line with Loud, or do you fancy Loud?
We all have great time for the likes of Glenn Ryan, you know, Dermot Early, Johnny Dial, these fellas all involved, yeah. all involved with Kildare. And what people are saying about Kildare is they're very inconsistent. For me, this year, particularly in the league, they've been very consistent because they've been so poor. to be honest, their skill execution has been awful. For there's so much potential down there. I have it in the back of my head, like, that these players, you know, are just they're in a rut at the moment, Sean, to be honest with you. Yeah. And you know yourself, when you start losing games and, you know, your confidence dips, and good footballers can even look poor. But, like, when you look at Mick O'Grady, Kevin Feely, Kevin Flynn, Derek Kerwin, you know, unbelievable footballers. And then you add on, you know, Aaron Marston in the middle of the field. Now and again, you see these fellas showing great things. And I just think that the last day, they showed great character. Like, I'm sure Reggie will like this, to be honest with you. But yeah. against Wicklow, like, they played with 14 men.
That's right.
And they played some really good football. And they added, you know, their centre-forward, the last day, they added in Niall Kelly at centre-forward, who's a small playmaker. He kind of sets that forward line going. And they did for in periods of that game, you know. But the other thing they showed as well is with 13 men, how to win the game when it was there for the taking. You know, Wicklow could have got it with that chance of a goal, but Kildare just kept going. They got the score in the end. And that could be what they needed to just get out of that rut that they're in. They're up against Loud, Gerard Brennan, Niall Moynagh, James McCartan doing great work up there. So Loud are going very well, and Loud are the confident team going into this one. But in the back of my head, I just have a feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Kildare might get out of that rut, and the fact that they, you know, just great character the last day, that they could go on and win this game. But look at Loud, look at the forward line Loud have as well, and Croke Park will suit them. Mulroy, Grimes, Downey, Ryan Byrne, these are really good footballers, you know. And they added in the centre forward the last day that I hadn't seen either, is a fella called Keenan, a centre forward the last day, played good, really well. So I hadn't seen him before, but I probably just missed him. But he played really well and gelled that forward line together. It's going to be an interesting one. Loud of the form team going into it. Back in my head, I'm thinking Kildare. So could be. I was thinking there last night, Sean, it could go down to a draw, it could go down to penalties, and Kildare could win it in the end. But I think it's going to be that close.
Okay, Brian, well, we'll see how that one goes. I look forward to it.
I'm moving
Carlingford last weekend and enjoying the beautiful countryside that is up around Loud. I wish them well anyway, and against Kildare, because Kildare beat Wicklow. All right, Brian, as always, we'll catch up to you again next week. Take care. I'll talk to you soon. Brian Talty there giving us all of his thoughts on the football. And there's plenty going on in the hurling too. Big games right across the board. Sean, this weekend, Leinster sees the clash of Galway and Kilkenny. How do you think that'll go?
Yeah, Reggie, that's a huge clash this weekend, and traditionally the Galway Kilkenny round robin game isn't great, because there's a lot of showboating, kind of. There's always a 90% chance they're going to meet in the Leinster final afterwards. Having said that, though, the good games we usually get are when they're played in Galway, and this one is down to be played in Galway. Had a look at the Galway team, and he's a few changes. He's Doughty Burke reinstated at 3, and Fintan Burke onto 4 with Pádraig Mannion at back out at number 6. Very interesting. He's Conor Whelan and Conor Cooney from Thomas's, both picked at the full forward line. Now, they're both match winners, and I think if he can really get the best out of them, you know, Galway have a really, really good chance here tomorrow. He's good subs as well. He's Sarsfield's Joseph Cooney, and he's Evan Nyland on the line, as well as Jason Flynn. And interesting, and we did mention it previously, he's Jonathan Glynn picked in the subs as well. So he's obviously kind of a plan around him that if they're not winning possession, I'd say he will introduce him. On the other side, I had a look at Kilkenny. Now, they demolished Antrim, who are going through a transition at this stage, but they put up 5.30. But the bad thing from a Kilkenny point of view, they picked up 3 big injuries. The goalie Owen Murphy doesn't play, Adrian Mullen doesn't play, and Owen Cody doesn't play. Now, Kilkenny have won the last four Leinster Championships, Reggie, and they're going for 5 in a row. But missing those 3, particularly for Sunday, now, whether they're long-term injuries or whether he's just saying, I'm going to rest these, I'll need them, obviously, for a Leinster final and maybe the last game against Wexford, who seemingly have a good record against Kilkenny recently. So he's probably kind of saving them, but I just think he still has TJ Reid up front, and two big guys, Liam Blanchfield and John Donnelly. I just fancy Galway today, but that's not saying that, I'd fancy Galway to win the Leinster.
Yeah, and always with that Shefflin Kilkenny edge to it, you're always interested in that one. Okay, Dublin are playing Carlo also. That'll be a good one as well.
Absolutely, Reggie. And you know, Dublin got a great draw the last day down in Wexford. People told me all week that Wexford were the better team.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure. Wexford did pull ahead at one stage.
You called the draw, in fairness, did you?
I did. I just felt that there'd be nothing in it, was one. And I felt that Wexford just have a difficulty getting over the line against Dublin and have done for the last 5 years. But look at... That'll be a good game. Tom Mullally with Carlo, you know, he's an exceptional manager. They gave Galway a very good run. I expect Dublin to get over the line here, Reggie, but 5-6 points certainly won't be anything more than that.
Okay, and in Munster, of course, Cork and Clare, both teams beaten last week. You know, you felt Clare were going to get victory in that one, but you did call Cork. So with that balance in mind, I'm presuming you're edging towards Clare for this one?
Well, Reggie, I have to say, both managers, Pat Ryan and Brian Lowen, I actually think they'll be scratching their heads all week as to how they lost them, all for different reasons. Pat Ryan's team came out against Waterford, and we did say that Waterford would throw the kitchen sink at them. They didn't seem to be psychologically prepared for this. Jamie Barron scored a goal in the first minute or two and ran straight down the middle and nobody met him. I could imagine in Lansdowne Road someone running towards the post, there'd be certainly someone in their way. And they just didn't play well. Cork have also made six changes, Reggie, and a team of 15. I mean, to me, that sends out signals that, look, we don't really know what we're at here. We looked at these guys for five or six games. We picked the best team. We got it wrong, and we're changing it around by six more. So Cork, I think, are in a bit of trouble.
You wouldn't think it might be a case of the managers not being happy with the performance of those six and feeling they didn't come up to the standard that they expect, and they're just laying down a marker. Look, you know, nobody's safe in this team.
I'd say that's the thought process, but you have to factor in, does that throw chaos and what does it do with a determined team? Would the right thing to be have dropped two of them and maybe even three and brought in three and bring in three more or drop them? But look, we'll see how that goes. I mean, you're making a valid point. I mean, if the message gets through that I want to play here and they give a performance and win, well, then it's the right thing. On the other side, Brian Lowen will certainly be scratching his head, Reggie. I mean, they had a game won, they were 9 points up. Yeah. They didn't play particularly well, but they played well enough, and Limerick were very, very poor. But, you know, at the end of the day, they just seemed like somebody went into town on a Lewis with all the lights and everything on, and when they came out, the town was closed and it was dark and they just didn't know how to find their way home. One point I'd make, Reggie, the third goal for Limerick the last day, Keane Lynch cleared a great ball from the half-back line up to Gerard Hegarty. This is true, Reggie, because I had a look at this three or four times. There were people in the front row of the stand were nearer to Gerard Hegarty than any of the Clare backs.
Right.
And that's very, very hard to think imagine. In a championship game. And he ran in, and obviously, now, to be fair, it was a square ball, but that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
If he was being marked, I mean, you could have given him a free or whatever, he might have put the ball wide. But that'll be, and one thing, Reggie, on this game, this is a knockout game. Whoever loses this game, I don't think you and me will be talking a lot about them between now and the end of the summer. So it's a do or die. Who do I expect? If Clare can get the form that they had in the league, they should win this game. But look, the old Rebels down in Cork, they're a very proud and passionate hurling people. There's probably one last throw of the dice with them.
Okay, well, in the other way, and final one, Limerick are taking on Tip, who didn't play last week. Limerick probably wondering how they lost last week, but this should be an excellent game. Limerick, you feel, would be stronger than Tip the way things are at the moment, but, you know, after last week, you don't know.
Yeah, well, let's take Tip first in this. Liam Cahill there, second year. He has brilliant forwards with Jason Ford, Jake Morris, Gerard O'Connor. Great experience in his back line with Rowan Amar, Brian O'Mara, also Michael Breen. But Reggie, they were really poor in the league semi-final, if you remember, against Clare. They couldn't put a free over the bar. Their efficiency at scoring was very, very poor. So having said that, they didn't play last week. They'll have had a good look at Limerick. Now, let's be clear, Limerick didn't play well last week either, got out of jail the last 15 minutes. So Tipperary will fancy themselves. Now they're going in to play Limerick in Limerick. But Limerick being Limerick, you know, Limerick are in a position, Reggie, they have to win a home game against Tipperary tomorrow, against a team that hasn't played. And if they win, Limerick are almost in a Munster final and certainly out the gate as far as qualifying for the All-Irelands is concerned. And they'll be very hard stopped if Limerick can get across the line tomorrow.
Absolutely. Well, again, a fantastic game to look forward to. And as always, an absolutely jam-packed weekend of GAA to look forward to in both football and hurling. Okay, Sean, as always, a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much to you and to Brian Talty, of course, for that excellent analysis. And we'll catch up with you again next week. Time to turn our attention now to football. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm great, Reggie. Yourself?
Wonderful. I'll talk snooker to you at the end before we finish, right? We'll talk football for the beginning because I know you're probably watching more snooker than football at the moment. But a big game last night, Rovers against Galway in Tallaght Stadium. And they left it late, Rovers, to get the equaliser.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to the snooker chat, Reggie. You know me too well. But it was a disappointing result for them because I suppose people would have had that down as a home banker, especially when you think of the form the Shamrock Rovers have been in the last couple of weeks, obviously winning plenty of matches. I know they had the draw Monday night to Shelburne, but I think they had won 5 of the previous 6. And Galway, who obviously have just been promoted, but they're a tough nut to crack, Galway, just because of their approach. They're very defence-minded, pack plenty of people behind the ball. They would have been camped on the edge of the box. And look, that's their idea of trying to get the best way to get 3 points, Reggie. And as Stephen Bradley said in his interview, they're fully entitled to do that. It's up to Shamrock Rovers to break them down. And he said in his interview that they just weren't good enough to break them down on the night. They didn't play anywhere near the level that they've been playing at over recent weeks. And it's probably a good result for Galway, but I think a well-deserved point as well, judging by the comments from the manager.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're constantly saying that Rovers are the team, but they're making these little slips along the way and making it difficult on themselves and maybe handing opportunities to others. Shelburne taking that opportunity, getting a good 1-0 victory over St. Pat's. I saw Damien Duff playing down the little spat or whatever you want to call it around himself and Shane Farrell. It seems to be all love and roses again there between the two of them, but he'll be delighted with that 1-0 victory and getting back on track, let's say, over St. Pat's last night.
Yeah, a massive result, especially another Dublin derby coming off the back of the 1-1 tonight against Shamrock Rovers. And a comment he made after that game as well, which probably got lost, Reggie, off the back of the Shane Farrell stuff, was the fact that he mentioned after the Shamrock Rovers game, we have our team back, because for the previous three or four games, they'd only picked up a point out of 9, and he was disappointed with the defeats, particularly the Bohemians and Galway. So he felt on Monday night to put in a really good performance. I was at the game, they played really well, and then to follow it up with a victory last night against St. Pat's, they certainly do have their team back. And I think it's important what you said there, Reggie, the fact that when Shamrock Rovers do have these little slip-ups, it's so important that the other teams capitalise, and that's been the problem for them, I suppose, last year when Shamrock Rovers got off to that slow start. It's not been as slow this year, but it's slowish, and yet the teams haven't really capitalised. So when they do have those little blips, it's important Shelburne, Derry, like we seen last night, pick up the victory and take advantage, and they picked up the 3 points. And Derry as well, obviously winning away to Waterford, it's important they capitalise as well. So I think that's the only way, if we're going to have a league race, that if Shamrock Rovers are, I suppose, stuttering in the odd game here and there, the other teams have to pounce on it and have to try and pick up the 3 points. And fair play to Shelburne, that was a tough week, obviously Shamrock Rovers and Pats, to pick up 4 points out of 6 off the back of some of that negative publicity. I didn't really see it as negative publicity. There's no harm in giving someone a kick up the backside, Reggie, and it's almost as if the world we live in nowadays that you can't do that. I know he went public, but I don't see any issue with it whatsoever. I think it's for the benefit of the player, and if it means that he'll knuckle down and be a better professional because of it, I think it's good for Shane Farrell.
Well, in this world of sensationalism that we live in now, it's always they're always trying to find any little bit to nitpick about, so I'd agree with you. Anyway, we're not going to go into it any further and give it any more airtime. The Bows, you're talking about teams slipping up and making mistakes. Bows, that's a bad result for them. Dundalk, bottom of the table. Bows only played 12 matches, so they have a game in hand against the likes of Derry and Shelburne. They were on 19 points, could have been up there on 22 with a game in hand, same as Derry City, and they go and lose 2-0. And that's a big mistake at this stage of the season.
Yeah, definitely, Reggie. That's a poor result because they had 1-3 on the bounce. But I think, to be fair to Alan Reynolds, he's been quite honest in the game so far. Even the games that they had won, he wasn't getting carried away. He knows there's major work to be done at Bohemians, hence him getting the job in the first place. But as you say, it looks bad on paper because Dundalk bottom of the table. But in fairness to Dundalk, obviously they appointed Noel King during the week, looking for a bounce, looking for a reaction. Strange appointment for me, especially. I know Noel was obviously heavily involved years ago and has had a stellar career, but it was a strange appointment for me. But they certainly got a bounce and got a kick from it. It's an important day. Again, capitalise on that now and try and move up the table. But from Bo's point of view, as you say, just because they had won the three on the bounce and just to stay on the coattails of Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers and the like, would have been important to get the victory, but it wasn't to be.
Just getting away from the Dublin teams and talking in particular about Drogheda and Dundalk, it's strange to see both of them propping up the bottom of this league when they were teams that were so prominent in this league just a few years ago and, you know, title contenders and such strong history with them. Are you surprised, or does it kind of go along with the way things have been panning out for the last while with both of those teams?
Well, the Dundalk one is the obvious one when you think of the success that they've had, Reggie, and they just never built on it. You look at the ground as well, it's probably the worst ground in the world, never mind just in Ireland. It's absolutely horrendous, Oriel Park. It's really, really poor. And as I say, the success that they had, they just never built on it in terms of off the pitch and certainly on the pitch. And when Stephen left, Vinnie Perth came in, and there was a year after when they won a few things, won a league as well. But since then, because of ownership issues, mismanagement, it just hasn't been handled and dealt with properly. And obviously Stevie O'Donnell lost his job last week as well, and it's sad to see because I do have a bit of a soft spot for Dundalk, and as you say, teams from outside Dublin that you want to see regional teams doing very well, and we need those teams as well to be doing very well. And it is sad to see where they're at the moment. Hopefully Noel has come in and can get a bit of a kick out of them. I don't know now, to be honest, whether he will or not, but that was a good start last night. But it is sad to see, because whatever about Drogheda's success, that was many years ago. I'm not surprised to see them down there, and they've been actually overachieving and just staying in the league because of their resources. And again, Kevin getting a victory last night and doing really, really well just to be where they are. But the Dundalk one particularly, because of the success and the money that was made and European football and all that brought, and just to see them where they're at now, and as I said, and nothing being done, if anything it's gone backwards, with especially with facilities and resources, it's quite sad to see, Reggie.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I hope you're not going to Oriel Park anytime soon. You'll get a warm reception.
Well, it is, and yeah, that might sound harsh. That's the reality of it, Reggie. It's absolutely horrendous, the ground and facilities and the pitch. The pitch is a problem as well. It's absolutely disastrous. That Astro pitch, it's years old. It's horrendous. And it might sound harsh, but that's the honest truth. And that's where we're at in Irish football. If we're ever going to get move things forward, and you look at the presentation that was released during the week about the academy football, and people think Irish football's in a good place. It's not, Reggie. It's in one of the worst places it's ever been. And the only way we're going to move it forward is obviously investment, but things being run properly and harsh truths being said as well.
Well, if that's the way you feel about that, then after talking to Ken earlier, you'd be in favour of moving out of the Crucible, would you? For the snooker?
Not in a million years, Reggie. Not in a million years. History counts for plenty, and there's nothing wrong with the Crucible in my eyes. I was delighted to see Ken standing up to Barry Hearn during the week. We mentioned a moment ago about the world we live in terms of you can't really say too much, and obviously the criticism that Damien Duff got for going public on one of his players. But also for Barry Hearn to come out now and it just feels like to sell your soul, and it's just money, 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 and they'll go over there and tarnish their legacy. Look, just like the golfers have done, no one mentions John Rahm now, Brooks Koepka, all these household names. No one cares about them anymore, Reggie. And it's sad to see, and it'll be the same with the snooker if they move it over to Riyadh, and purely for money reasons, not for any other reason. And if anyone else thinks it's for any other reason, don't be fooled by that. It's purely for money and pure greed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, with Hearn involved, you can know that it's about money, because that's basically his business. Okay, we're delighted, Alan. Thanks a million for joining us on that and giving us a fantastic roundup on the League of Ireland, and the snooker stays in the Crucible. That's the most important bit as well. And we'll catch up with you again next week.
Thanks, Reggie.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.